I was hearing today. And then the other thing 16, is
16 teams, but you know.
The other thing is that you could, if you're, depending on how the seeding is, and Coach Pugh was saying on the last day of whatever this competition, whenever it settles, you could be a number two seed and play a game and end up being number eight, but you won't know until Monday. Or vice versa. You could be a number eight seed and wind up number two. And of course, if you're an eight seed, you got to go out to where, Central Massachusetts or someplace. So I'm just confused. I will say this. The football has been tremendous. You saw an incredible game over the weekend.
Yeah. You know, I think if Beverly played anybody else, they went on Saturday, but the resiliency of Marblehead was just amazing. I mean, they're so talented across the board, especially in all the key positions. They've got multi-year experience at the key positions. And in talking to Phil after the game in the interview that we did, Marblehead has big-time players. And those big-time players showed up on Saturday. All the big-time players had big games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, across the board, quarterbacks, receivers, running backs. Holy moly. I mean, you know, then they jump to the other side of the ball and they play defense. And they just kept Beverly guessing. Beverly went down quick. They were down 21-6 at the half. Mm-hmm. But to their credit, they come back out. They scored in their first possession. But Marblehead, I think it was the first or second play when they got the ball back. 74-yard pass play inside the Beverly 10. And they score. Beverly comes back, scores again. Marblehead, 49-yard pass play. And it's like, and all these passes, they're on the money. They're dropping in there. And the and the receivers.
I heard, yeah.
Catching like Gronk all day.
I heard the announcers on the Beverly broadcast mention one thing about it was a bad throw. I think Beverly might have intercepted a ball. And they were saying it was a bad throw. And I know that watching a practice, and he said, he threw to a place instead of to the receiver. But that's what they do, because the receiver is expected to be there, at least from what I've seen. And it's been successful to an amazing degree. But it's not just the passing game too, Coach. It's the running game, their defense, everything.
The running game, the line was blocking like madmen. They were, you know, they went where they went when they wanted to, and kudos to them. You know, I mean, it was a tremendous effort by Marblehead and Beverly. Beverly just kept coming. They wouldn't quit. It was like watching a Jake LaMotta fight. He got the crap beat out of him, but he kept getting up and coming into the middle of the ring again.
Beverly's had some tough losses.
Yeah.
They really have. And who do they have this week? I'm just looking at the schedule coming up. They got a big game. I think it's with Swampscott at home on Saturday.
Yes.
And that is, what time? That's a 1 o'clock scheduled start. And also on Saturday, big game for Hamilton Wenham as they try to stay atop the conference. They face Triton at 1 o'clock as well at home.
Yeah, Coach Rudloff is saying he has a bye week this week.
Okay.
They're not playing.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I asked Coach Pugh about the scheduling this year because the first three games, you know, schools picked up other teams to try to rise in the rankings for the playoffs, and I, again, don't understand any of it. But Coach Pugh, we can listen to, well, he actually talked to me afterwards. As I said, my eyes glazed over. The prep, they got a big game on Friday evening to try to rebound. They're at BC High. Fenwick hosts Fian, another big game. Some huge games. Newburyport is at North Reading. Newburyport trying to rebound after their loss to Hamilton Wenham. Lynn Classical is hosting Milford. English travels to Malden. Wow, I'm stuttering here. Pentucket at Ipswich. These are Friday games. Linfield at Amesbury. That's going to be a big one. And the game I may go to and cover, I'm just undecided at the moment. But, again, we're not allowed to you have to wear a mask in the press box, and I have a very hard time broadcasting wearing a mask with my glasses and the mask and so on, and try to keep stats everything fogs up looking up and down. But anyway, so I may cover that game and get the post-game coverage. It's Maskinomet at Danvers. And although, you know, the Falcons' record is surprisingly 0-2 in the conference, 3-3 overall, they're as tough as ever. And I think that's going to be a big one against Masco. Masco's 5-1 overall, 1-1 in the conference. So that should be a huge game. Gloucester got on the board finally. They beat Saugus, I believe it was,
yes,
over the weekend. They're traveling to Peabody, and it's not going to be an easy game for Gloucester.
I want to hope for a lot of traffic.
That's going to be a tough one, I will tell you.
It will be.
And
but surprising things have happened.
I have to bring this up, Coach, and I don't quite know how to handle it. Manchester Essex 76, Minuteman 6, and it was 62-0 at the half.
Who else can you put in? You know, I'm sure Coach went down the line and said, okay, you guys are in. And the object of playing the other team is the other team to stop you. You know, and Paul Ingram used to get very upset because he'd be criticized because his very talented teams back in the aughts, would be up 35, 40 points at halftime. And he's already putting in second stringers. And then he would give generally the varsity one possession beginning of the second half. And then he would simply empty the bench and go to the second and third stringers for the remainder of the game. So the other coach could do the exact same thing and give the kids experience. But if it is the duty of the defense to stop the other team, no matter who they're playing up against. And obviously, Minuteman has a very weak program this year, and we hope that it bounces back. But I'm sure, you know, you can't, and we know coaches have done this, you drive to inside the 10, and we've seen it, take a knee. Or fumble the ball and give it back to them deep in their own territory, just so you don't keep scoring points and embarrassing. You don't want to embarrass the other team. You don't want to embarrass the other coach. You don't want to embarrass the parents. But if the other team can't tackle you, if the other team can't defend a pass, you know, what are you supposed to do? Run to the 1 yard line and turn around and run the other way?
I'm just wondering. Agreed on all of that, and that's a good explanation. And I'm sure Coach Grimes did the best he could to not embarrass anybody. But what does that say about? I just wonder where Manchester Essex is in terms of competition, because they were in the Cape Ann League last year, and it looks to me like they're going to be invited back in with their performance this year. But they're probably the second smallest school, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Rockport obviously is the smallest, but they don't play football. But then you go to the Commonwealth Conference, which is where they always have been, and they absolutely dominate. I mean, you know, so you can't blame the kids for playing.
No, and the kids, you know, and I was talking to Coach Hutton and said, "Boy, you left those guys in really good shape." He goes, "Well, because Coach Hines got Coach of the Week." From the, I think it was the Boston Globe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to Jeff's credit, he did lead the program in not only good hands, but also in good shape in terms of the players that were coming back and as solid as they were. And they simply have picked up under Coach Grimes and they have just continued. And Coach Grimes, I believe was, Jeff's JV coach.
Mm-hmm.
While he was there.
Yeah, he's been there
quite
a while.
So there's a familiarity with the program. So this was something that they were just, okay, let's just keep going. And the kids have bought into it, and they're playing with heart, they're playing with pride. And did they want to run up 76 points? Well, it's strange. When you're a kid, it's like, oh, how many can we score? But at some point, the coach is probably trying to slow you down by putting, you know, you're taking people out of the stands and asking, do you have any eligibility left?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's the only thing you have left to do.
Well, I know you can. In hockey, I remember certain years and certain you the kids would change positions, or they'd have to shift, they'd have to change their sticks and so on. But you try not to notice. I agree with all that. But, you know, that being said, I want to shift gears here for a little bit.
Well,
we
want to
talk
with Coach McQueen
in a minute.
And I'm sure they went running time.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
okay,
that was from the second quarter on.
Okay, so running time, and you still put up 76.
Yeah.
Okay, so was Miniman even putting out people on defense?
Well, that's the thing, and the thing is, consistently, Manchester Essex, over the years, their starting 11, probably could compete at most levels. I'm thinking Division II on down, but they don't have the numbers. So
right.
If a kid gets hurt, you got to put plug a freshman in. So they've been very fortunate this year. They're where they belong. I just guess that you're right. I mean, you can't. And that was the other thing. Like Coach Ingram used to say, I mean, who am I supposed to put in? I put in a freshman. They've still got their starters out there.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? He's going to get hurt. So
yeah. It's absolutely crazy.
It's hard.
In terms of you don't want to run it up, but it's like. You can't tell your kids, okay, get the ball and fall down.
All right, let's talk. Let's take a break here, and we'll go to Colin McQueen, the Amesbury football coach, whose team pulled out a big 30-28 win over North Reading. We'll play that in just a minute, and we'll come back with some more talk, hopefully about the Red Sox. What a surprise! How well they're doing. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
What do you mean? They're doing great. Are you kidding me? That's a surprise to me. All right, we'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Amesbury High School football coach Colin McQueen. And coach, man, things have tightened up in the Cape Ann League. Congratulations on what must have been an amazing game last weekend.
Yeah, thank you. It certainly is tight in the Cal. There's always good competition. Yep.
Well, I see you got 1, 2, 3, 4, four teams at the top, all at 3-1. But the big thing is you guys did knock off North Reading. They were flying high. Tell me a little bit about this game. I'm having some problems getting the readouts on this thing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, our covering paper is the Newburyport Daily News. So I know we're in there. And then sometimes if you can't get to it, you gotta clear out the cookies and everything and then get in there.
Okay, because I did try to do that. I know Kyle's a one man show and it's hard for him to get everything in. So
yep.
Thanks for the plug, and I will link to that also, Coach.
All right. But so we're in there. It was a 30-28 win. And it was one that came right down to the wire, like many of our games have. Very, very exciting, especially in the fourth quarter. There was quite a bit of scoring. We put up, two touchdowns, and converted both two pointers, and then they scored twice and only converted one of the two pointers. And that was the difference. We had a couple actually leading to our first score of the fourth quarter. It was actually at the very end of the third quarter. We had the conversion. There was a 4th and 5. And Nick Martin was able to convert that on a sweep play. And then the big one was in the fourth quarter driving, tied 22-22 and, big 4th and 3 play, at about the 40-yard line going in. And, we actually went to the air, threw the ball, big completion to a wide open Henry O'Neill over the top, and he was able to run away from everybody and score. And then, weird. Sometimes you need the ball to bounce your way. We actually got that on the two-pointer following that score. We had a fumble, and it ended up bouncing right to Andrew Baker, who was in the end zone, covered it up, and that was our two-point conversion. They scored right away. It took them only 4 plays, got the ball back, drove the field, and we were lucky enough to have a ball batted down. We got some pressure on him, and he tried to come back against the grain and hit an open receiver. One of our D linemen got a hand on it, as a few of them had the quarterback in the grasp. So it was a very, very exciting one. We were able to convert a first down and then take knees and run the clock out.
You know, it sounds like the key moments were at the most important times in the game. As you looked at the game tape and everything, who stood out for you on the line, Coach?
On the line, you know, it's been the same guys who we've always leaned on, and Big Tony and Devin Gannon at the tackle positions. They've been great. The D lineman I just mentioned who batted that ball down in the defensive line was a young guy, Aaron Baruti. He really was getting his first taste of varsity time on Friday night and made the most of it for sure. You know, and then it was a great performance again by our backs, but the guy who stood out in the stat line the most was Drew Mack, our quarterback. We knew North Reading was going to pack the box and we were going to have to probably beat him through the air. He threw for two touchdowns and 158 yards through the air, 6 of 7. And his only incompletion, he threw it away because they actually did a good job of covering it up on that one. But threw the ball with great touch, made great decisions, and was huge for us through the air.
That must have been a great game to watch. Was that a home game for you guys?
It was, yeah.
First
time back since that game against Wayland. We were on the road for the last three, so the home fans were rocking, and it was an exciting environment for sure.
All right. Okay, so who's up next for you guys?
Next, we got Linfield coming into town.
Oh, yeah, that's an easy game.
They've always got great athletes, and we'll do our best to be ready for that one. But, we'll have our hands full. It's a tough end of the season for us. We got them, and then we got Pentucket coming to town, and they've been doing very well as well.
You know, and Hamilton Wenham is up there at the top. You beat North Reading. You guys are up there 3-1. And as you say, Pentucket, the Cape Ann League just, man, it's going to go down. It could even end up being decided on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you never know. And then the other part that makes me very proud is where everyone's fallen, you know, in the state playoff system.
Mm-hmm.
I think all these Cal teams are going to be very competitive against the rest of the state. And, you know, that's good. You know, when you get great games every week, it gets you ready for the postseason. And we feel that the Cal is as strong now as it has been, you know?
Yeah, and it's nice to see so many North Shore teams in all the different divisions ranked very highly. So we got a good chance here in the MIAA tournament. Coach, anything else you want to mention?
No, I don't think so. Hopefully we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Coach, I appreciate it. Take care.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you. That's Colin McQueen, who is the Amesbury High School football coach. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All righty, then. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky. Bill Newell, don't forget, hosts the Salem News Sports Writers podcast, and that will be on tomorrow morning around 8 o'clock, and that features Bill, of course, with Salem News sports editor, executive sports editor Phil Stacey, assistant sports editor Matt Williams, sports writer Nick Giannino, and Gloucester sports editor Nick Kukru. And Tim, just talking to you a second ago, I do want to mention what a fantastic column that Matt Williams wrote. I think it was on Friday, maybe, about some or most of the high school football coaches on the North Shore. It was tremendous.
Yeah, he get into talking about leading off with talking about some of the coaches that have really turned around their programs. You mentioned Jeff Hutton, Bouchard out of Salem. Salem, you know, undefeated for the first time they've had a four game winning streak, first time they beat Gloucester in 29 years or something
like that.
Some crazy. 22 years, 1999. God, I remember that game with Matt Hogan. Oh, my God. He just tore them apart.
Were you at the game we did, or maybe it was Paul? I did a game there when no, it could have been Paul. He was coaching. We did a game there when Gloucester was flying high. Salem was not. And Salem, I think they lost that game 6-0 to Gloucester. Gloucester had something like 5 turnovers. But there was one point in that game, and I'm not sure it was that one or another game, when Salem had a 3rd-and-70 to go for the first down.
Yeah, that was a crazy game.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
But God, you know, it's great that these guys, Salem is doing so well, Coach Bouchard. And he mentioned so many of the other coaches on the North Shore, too, are doing so well.
He just went through the litany of the entire
coaching tree
of the Northeast Conference and also Cape Ann.
Because,
you know, Jim Pugh got a mention in there. And Jim Schilling does an outstanding job since going over to Hamilton Wenham from Masco. I think that was a move that surprised an awful lot of people. They figured he'd be a lifer and then retire from Masco. But he made the move, and Gavin McGonigal's done an outstanding job at Masco. Since he took over, and Jim has really kept the Hamilton Wenham wagon train rolling.
Yep, and he mentioned Brian St. Pierre, the job he's done at the prep. Jim Rudloff, of course, that goes without saying. You don't even have to mention that.
Yeah.
For Marblehead. Ryan Nolan at Danvers. I mean, it was, but he went into detail on how these guys, how well they've done with what they've had. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and they've.
Salem News on Friday.
Yeah, if you get a chance to go online and go into the archives, but they have just been producing some really great feature stories on the sports page, all during the pandemic where sports was kind of shut down and they weren't playing all the time, and they found a way to keep sports alive.
Oh yeah,
with varied and sundried news. Articles, feature stories on individuals, on past teams. I mean, they were just spinning everything, and it was very entertaining to open up the paper every day and see what they're going to be doing.
Tonight we will be talking with Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian, in just a few minutes, as a matter of fact. And then we'll check in with Mike Grenier. I haven't heard back from Mike, but I'm hoping he's ready to talk with us. I want to ask Mike a little bit about we talked about statistics and high scoring, and I want to bring back, and maybe you can mention this too, Tim, the days of the Celtic championship teams, and we can go back into the 60s all the way into the 80s, when statistics, individual statistics, there were no Celtics among any of the leaders, but they would win 67, 70 games, that kind of thing, because of the same thing. The starters would come out in the second or third quarter. And I think in particular, Larry Bird, I mean, he had some incredible games, but a lot of times he just stayed on the bench. They rested him.
Yeah, a lot.
Russell got some rest, you know, the whole thing.
I mean, how many times in the fourth quarter did you see Parrish, McHale, and Bird all sitting on the bench?
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, going like,
yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yep. All right, one more break, and then we'll see if we can check in with Gary Larrabee. We'll talk a little Red Sox later on. They play tonight at 8-0-something or other on FS1. Yep, and before we do that, to me, the best play, the most exciting, fun play I have seen in years, and I'm going to exclude Big Poppy, and I'm going to exclude Kike, was Schwarber at first base. Is that how you pronounce his name? Schwarber. When he fielded the ball, tried to underhand it to the pitcher, and he threw it 20 feet over his head. And then the next play, same play, and he gives it right to the pitcher perfectly, and he does a fist bump, and he starts shouting like a little leaguer. Then he takes his cap off to the crowd. I thought that was self-effacing and beautiful. Talk about someone enjoying the game.
He did something similar the other night. He made another similar play as the one where he had the error on. And even though it was in Houston, he still gave a tip of the cap. I was like, okay, this guy.
He's having fun.
He is.
All right.
He is.
Okay, we shall break, and we'll come right back with Gary Larrabee. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, tomorrow, Salem News Sports Writers Podcast will be right here. It'll be on the Salem News website as well as ours.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
Okay, we're joined now by Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, and generally an all-around good guy. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Tim.
Good evening, my friend. Oh, Gary, before we start, have you ever heard of the caddy school up in New Hampshire?
Well, I know there was one at Poland Spring at sometimes up in Maine, but I'm not sure I'm aware of a caddy camp in New Hampshire in recent years or many moons. You got one for me?
Yeah, I think it was Maplewood. I got it written on my desk calendar because I saw a show on New Hampshire Chronicle, and I started to go, I got to mention this to Gary, and it's up in Bethlehem, New Hampshire.
That sounds right. That does sound right. Well, good to know. What's the point, Tim?
Well, I did not know that there were schools for caddies.
Yeah, they still have a summer camp at Sankaty Head down in Nantucket, and the Cape Cod big money courses used to have caddy camps in the summer to make sure they'd have kids to caddy, and they would give the kids a chance to make money and to learn a little bit more about the ways of the world, and sometimes they get some scholarship help. Anyways, let's get back to Rory McIlroy. How about Rory McIlroy yesterday, Tim?
How about caddy camp? Yeah, you know, I saw over the I didn't see yesterday, but I saw over the weekend that he was trailing by a couple of shots, and I'm like, he's close, and that was after reading his proclamation that when he's on, he's the best golfer in the world.
I can't blame him for saying that. He's proven that is in fact the case when he won how many majors? 4 or 5. Anyways, he had a nice weekend. He overtook He's very disappointing, Ricky Fowler, and he beat Colin Morikawa. So it was a great show out in Las Vegas. I didn't watch much of it, but it brings us back to the fact that Rory McIlroy has still been one of the great players in the world in the last 10 years, I would say. He's the 39th player, Tim, to have 20 tour PGA Tour victories in his career. That's only the 39th player. He's won a tournament the last 5 years in a row, and he now is the sixth winningest active player on the PGA Tour. Can you name the five guys who've got more wins than him active on the tour?
More than him, huh?
I'll help you. Tiger has 82.
Mickelson.
Phil has 45, right, Rick? Vijay Singh has 34. Dustin Johnson has 24, cool. A very underachieving but still a great career.
Mm-hmm.
And Davis Love is 21. I did not know that Davis
Love. Davis Love, wow, that's a name
on the PGA Tour.
Wow, he was like the quiet assassin, Davis Love. Very unassuming, you know, when he was out on the course. Very mild mannered, and you know, not a big guy, just very smooth. That's all I can think of when I think of Davis Love. Just how smooth a golfer he was.
Yes, he had a great career, won a major, won the PGA Championship at Wingfoot Of course, that was a good weekend for Rory, though. Most important of all, he won $1.75 million out of the $9.75 million purse for winning this relatively nondescript tournament out in Vegas. So obviously it was a good week to be in Vegas for Rory McIlroy. Also a good week, as you guys know, for Lee Jansen, who won the Champions Tour, but I believe in North Carolina he beat Miguel Angel Jimenez in a playoff. Not a very likable guy, but he sure has a interesting way with his cigar and his ponytail.
I was going to say, was he still smoking the cigar?
Oh, he smokes. Anyways, good for Lee Jansen, one of the good guys on the tour. He won two U.S. Opens, but otherwise he's pretty much a forgotten player. But
yeah,
a good weekend for Lee. And, of course, today, guys, we're looking ahead to today, tomorrow, I believe Wednesday may be the third day. There are the MIAA Sectional Division Golf Championships in the team format. And, of course, we've got some terrific teams around here this year. Leading off, I think, with St. John's Prep, a definite favorite or a potential favorite to win the Division One state title. Because Beverly just beat Gloucester in the match of the year in the Northeastern last Thursday at Bass Rocks. Beverly is now undefeated, I believe, at 14-0. Gloucester was 16-0 coming in. They should both be qualifying teams this week. I think Beverly plays in Division Two tomorrow in Bradford. I think Gloucester was playing today at Renaissance, but I haven't seen any results yet on the MIAA website. I think the Prep is qualifying tomorrow in Division One. So we got those three teams in particular, Gloucester, Beverly, and St. John's Prep could all figure into the state championship determinations, which I believe are all next Monday.
Yeah, now, there was a kid locally who shot a 61 at a tournament. I can't remember where it was from, but it was from the Eastern Mass, and he shot 61. I was like, holy moly. Never see a kid shooting that kind of low score.
Yeah, but you know, these high school kids, some of them are as well prepared for golf competition as college players were 20 years ago. And you look at the scores in these junior tournaments, whether they be in statewide or nationally, these junior kids are shooting great scores too. So no surprise to me, Tim, but it does make a note that we're winding down to the end of the high school season. The PGA Tour, you know, this tournament they held this past weekend in Vegas, that's really the beginning of the 2021/22 season. And of course we got the U.S. Open coming up at Brookline next June. Mm-hmm. It's a long ways off, but the golf season just keeps on going.
Mm-hmm. Any news about, any new news about Salem Country Club?
No, just the fact that the project is moving along over there. They're digging up on making all new bunkers for their 57 Donald Ross bunkers. They're working on new tees, Tim. It's a big project. KPN has also done some wonderful work with their beautiful little 9-hole public course in Essex owned by the Stavros family. They've had some major work done on their golf course the last couple of years. It's all part of it, like we've talked about before. Salem Country Club is, I think, looking for another USGA championship. And once they get this $3.5 million restoration project complete, either this fall or next spring, they'll be ready to talk to the USGA about another USGA championship.
Now, Gary, I found something interesting this weekend. I was talking to one of my buddies, and he's a very avid golfer. And when I mentioned the renovation going on at Salem, he said that they one time owned the land where the access road to 95 comes off of 128. They owned all that land back there.
And the state
bought it from them to build the access road.
Well, actually, we thought it was bought, but actually it was given to the state and the federal government by eminent domain, but other parcels of land over there that abuts Salem Country that has been sold off by the club for other interests. But no, the area where all we see the Route 95, I-95 interchange and part of the new Route 1 and all that stuff over there, that was all taken from the club by Eminent Domain. The club didn't make a nickel on that stuff.
Ah, okay.
It's worked out for the club. It's worked out for improved traffic.
Oh, yeah.
Around there, and they'll need more improved traffic patterns if they have another USGA championship coming down the road.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Gary, listen, we've got everything going on, Rao. So next week, aside from golf, you got to pick one of the pro sports and let us know what your thoughts are.
Well, we certainly, I never thought I'd be watching the MLB Network waiting for your call tonight, guys. I'm watching the MLB Network getting ready for the Red Sox.
I know, I know. Who'd have thought it, huh?
Amazing, amazing story when you think about where they were back in April when we thought they were going to be maybe a 500 team at best. And here they are with a great chance to make it to the World Series with this new group of guys.
Yep, I'm knocking on wood as you say that. Gary, great stuff. We'll talk again next Monday.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Thank you, Gary.
Guys.
Stay well. Gary. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian. Knows everything about all sports, I guess, but the good stuff with golf, it just keeps going. What do you say, that this is the beginning of the next golf season now? Because where do they go? They go to Australia, right? And they go to Hawaii and stuff like
they
that.
They went to Hawaii.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, so one more break, and we'll bring on Mike Grenier. Not Mike Larrabee. We'll bring on Mike Grenier momentarily here. Where did you get my age, Coach? We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And Mike, we're talking just before you came on here on a little warm-up. You guys went to the prep game on Friday night, and I know...
Yeah, Gary Larrabee, it's funny. We kind of called each other during the week, so that looks like an attractive, you know, big-time matchup.
Yep.
Catholic Memorial number two.
Yep.
In the rankings, and St. John's Prep number one. So it was a gorgeous night, right? Until today, right, Rick? We've had this phenomenal summer-like weather, even for football season, as you know, from going out to games. And, my goodness, we were expecting a very competitive game, but John DiBiaso's Catholic Memorial team just was all over them, 38-9 final. I mean, it was just Prep couldn't get into it. They couldn't compete with them, you know?
Yeah, it's too bad because, high hopes. But it ain't over yet. You know, we still have a way to go.
I know. We have playoffs coming up and all that.
They got BC High next, so that's going to be a test as well.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, I have to ask you. I was talking with Tim here, and we were talking a little bit about high-scoring teams and so on. And
He doesn't know you're here.
I know. But
hi, Tim. It's great to hear your voice.
I was going to see how long I could take it, but Rick was dying.
and I hope you're feeling well.
Thank you.
I'm the one who was ill last week. I'll tell you, I didn't get out on Friday anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so what I want to start with, there's so much to talk, but we're trying to figure out, in high school, it's good sportsmanship versus running up the score.
Right.
And without throwing darts at anyone, but it immediately brought up to me the fact that all the Celtics championship teams, and you can talk 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, I guess, they rarely, rarely had any player in the top 5 or top 10 in any statistical category.
Right. I mean, you're right. I mean, as far as running up a score, I can't, I mean, seeing hundreds and hundreds of Celtics games in person and many others on TV, I can't remember a game where they ran it up as a team. In other words, ran up the score as a team to win by 40 or 50. And It's funny because speaking of that, I noticed that the Charlotte Hornets lost a preseason game last week by 67 points.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but I don't think necessarily, Rick, that they were, that the other opposing team ran it up on them. I think they only scored like 59 or 69 points.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an offensively challenged night. But as far as the Celtics are concerned, you're right. As a team, they didn't run it up on teams. And then they didn't have those guys that averaged, like, you know, like a Michael Jordan, like 38, 39, 40 points a game. We all remember that Will Chamberlain could average 50 a game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, but that was mostly because Will was such a physical specimen, he could just overpower teams, and that was his proclivity. I mean, he could get 55 points at the drop of a hat, and he'd also give you 26 rebounds or something, you know, and Bill Russell would come up big against him in big games. And Tim, I know you chip in on that one. I mean, we saw that happen many a time, and Will Chamberlain had a very frustrating career trying to beat the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, Bill even talked about it. He said his whole thing about playing Wilt, he said, I couldn't stop him if he wanted to score. I couldn't stop him.
Right.
His whole thing was getting into Wilt's head.
Exactly. And I think what Russell did, if we can all remember correctly, is that he sized up Chamberlain during the game, and he would make that big block shot late in the game or when the game was on the line. He could stop Wilt Chamberlain, but he didn't want to do it 48 minutes because Wilt was such a much bigger than Russell, and he would have physically worn down Bill Russell in a 48-minute game. So Russell picked his spots.
Yeah, I have one of those
things to do.
I have one of those famous photos where Russell is blocking an attempted stuff by Wilt. It's a classic.
Oh yeah, yes. But I'm sorry, Rick. Did we get sidetracked here? Could you talk about running up points?
No. What I was. No. I'm not. I want to kind of get off that railing a little bit and just mention how great those teams were because they were able to rest their superstars, bring them off the bench or onto the bench, so they didn't pad their stats. I mean, a lot of these pros now, I don't want to say a lot, but some stats are padded. You know that.
Oh yeah. No question about it.
It was kind of an anomaly to me because as a kid, I'm looking. Okay, well, where's Bob Cousy? Where's Russell? And they're not in the top 10. And
right.
it's because they were so good as a team.
And how about Red Auerbach? You talk about developing, like, long before teams did, a sixth man. I mean, my favorite player of all time, John Havlicek, and I had the pleasure of covering him many times and talking to him many, many times in the locker room. Havlicek used to come off the bench because, you know, Red Auerbach developed that whole idea of bringing a sixth man who would impact the game right away. And John Havlicek had great athletic skill, could run all day and all night, and he could score, and he could defend, and he could rebound. And he would drive opponents crazy because he would commit to the game, let's say with 4 minutes left in the first quarter or 6 minutes left in the first quarter, and play the next 17 or 18 minutes. And he'd have a huge impact in the game because he had fresh legs. But he was a sixth man. Red Auerbach didn't make him a starter. And, that was Red's intuition and his smarts and his basketball savvy all coming into play after he drafted John Havlicek.
All right,
bouncing Buckeye from Ohio State.
That's right.
What a motor. All right, I want to ask both of you guys this question now. Bring us up to date here. We're on the verge of opening up the Celtics season.
That's right, Wednesday night.
And I've seen some really negative press and heard some negative things on the radio about why did we keep Marcus Smart. And what do you guys say?
Well, Tim, I don't know. I think Marcus Smart is in a precarious position in the sense that I think if I'm reading this right, he's probably going to be the starting point guard. If it's not, it's going to be Dennis Schroeder. So Marcus is coming off a season, an up and down season, and of course he's getting negative press because he missed the team flight last week, which is inexcusable for a guy who's making the kind of money he's making. But you know, Marcus is—he paid his fine. It was handled internally, or whatever, and he's back on board. And it's not habitual of him to do something like that. So, I think he projects as the starting point guard. And if it doesn't work out, Dennis Schroeder will be the starting point guard. Now, I think that's a good move for the Celtics in the sense that if Marcus Smart is being relied upon to pass the ball, that means he will not take as many of those ill-advised three-pointers that we often see him take. I don't mind him taking three-pointers within the body of the game. However, with the game on the line, a two-point game, four-point game, and he throws up an ill-advised three and misses it, next thing you know, they're down six and the game is over. I think he has to play smart. smarter this season if he's going to be the type of player the Celtics feel he can be. And Tim, I don't know, what's your take on that one?
Well, you know, everybody praises him for being, you know, a really outstanding defensive ball player.
Right.
And if you're going to be the defensive guard, you're the number two guard. You're not the point guard. You're not the guy that's bringing it up and handing the ball all the time. You know, your job is to set screens, be the intermediary pass, take the jumper when it's open in your area. But your job is to shut down the other team's number one guy.
Right. So you're right. So you're using too much energy if you're trying to do both jobs. Good point. And if the Celtics go that route, then obviously Schroeder will be the starting point guard. I mean, I was reading various projections about the Celtics and where they might finish this year because they've had a makeover, really. And, you know, I see anywhere from fourth to sixth place in the Eastern Conference, which would place them, obviously, you know, if they finish as high as fourth, then they would have home court in the first round of the playoffs. If they finish fifth, they would play the fourth place team and be away. So I can sort of see that, a sort of a fifth or sixth place finish. They're not nearly as good as those upper tier teams, specifically Milwaukee and Brooklyn, although Brooklyn's in a state of turmoil because, come on, let's face it, Kyrie Irving is adamant about not getting the vaccine, and he will continue to be adamant until he misses a couple of paychecks. And the Nets seem to be a little bit tired of him. But on paper, that's a heck of a team because they got Kevin Durant, they have some other talent there, and Steve Nash is, I think, has a chance to be a great coach if they let him coach. So, you know, they're not going to be, the Celtics won't be in that upper tier. Philadelphia will also probably project better as a better team than the Celtics. And then after that, you kind of throw them in a hat. Atlanta Hawks came on strong in the playoffs last year. They're a factor. The Celtics would be somewhere in that bracket. I see them finishing somewhere around fourth or fifth place in the East, which obviously places them in the playoffs, you know. So I think the problem with the Celtics, Tim, I want to get your take on this, and maybe Rick too, is after Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, they don't have that third stud who could make them a real contender. They have a lot of role players. You know, you're talking Al Horford, you know, who's, you know, was a good player at his peak, but he's now 35 years old.
Robert Williams.
Much more of a complimentary player. They have a lot of complimentary players, role players, which is fine, but they don't have a third player who kind of projects as a potential star.
You know, I was just thinking about it, Mike. They have too many question marks.
Right.
Center,
right.
Question mark.
Yes.
Forwards, we know who they are.
Yeah.
Guards, both question marks. Are you going to play Schroeder? Where are you playing Schroeder? Where are you going to play Marcus? You know, what role is Williams going to have? Just too many unsettled positions.
Yes.
And what are you going to do with some of these guys? You just signed a couple of guys that you had last year. You signed the 7'2" kid again. How is he going to factor in? You know, I mean, that gives you 3-4 guys in the middle. Is Horford not going to be in the middle? Is he going to be a winger? You know, you're going into the season with really too many question marks, too much unsettled in terms of your roster.
I agree. I mean, for example, you mentioned Robert Williams. We know the potential he has. He's a shot blocker. He can dunk on anybody. He's quick off his feet. He's good. He's a good defender overall. But we're talking about a kid who's had an injury-filled career so far. And he only played 18 minutes a game last year. And if he's going to be the number one player at the center position, then he has to be able to play somewhere between 30 and 35 minutes. And can he do that? He has yet to prove he can do that. But I think the new coaches feel he can do that. So he's obviously the guy. He's the go-to guy at center right now. There's no other guy that is a better athlete than him. And then you also, among your question marks, Tim, the guys off the bench, Aaron Nesmith, who was, you know, a number one pick, is he good enough to give you really good minutes off the bench? Romeo Langford, who annoys me constantly, he only played 18 of a possible, like, 88 or 89 games, counting the play, 18 out of 88, because he's constantly injured. So that's another question mark. Does he have talent? He's shown it in a glimmer of talent here, a good game here, a good game there, but only playing 18 games is a very small sample size. So even with the guys coming off the bench, Grant Williams, Langford, Nesmith. Pritchard shows like he's a very good three-point shooter, but can he make a leap from one year to the next and improve as a scorer? Because even though he's a terrific three-point shooter, he really still just averaged 7 points a game last year.
So what do you see as Coach Ime Udoka's role? How do you envision him with all these question marks?
Well, you know, he's got to be the key to it. Obviously, Brad Stevens isn't around anymore. This guy is going to be making the decisions, Udoka, and he's talking tough in the preseason about, hey, let me take care. I love this about him. He said, I don't want a player, especially Tatum, and we all see Tatum. He doesn't get a call. He throws his arms up in frustration. He doesn't get back on defense, and that is terribly annoying, and it's also detrimental to the defensive aspect of the Celtics. So if the coach is willing to take on the referees, which is his job anyway, and tell the players, just shut up and play, I mean, that will be a positive impact that he has right away. But as a coach, Rick, what you're saying, yeah, he has to figure out what the best starting lineup is and what the best rotation is, and I don't think that's going to come early in the season. That will not come in the first 5 or 10 games of the season. You're going to have to see him experiment with different lineups and different rotations, guys coming off the bench, until he settles on a seven or eight or nine-man rotation, maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 games into the season. So I think, like you used the word unsettled, Tim, and I think they will be unsettled as a starting unit and as a rotation team for the first 15 or 20 games.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, I think what somebody needs to do is buy the coach a box of pencils.
Yes.
And a big eraser. Don't put anything down in ink, because it's going to change real quick.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Or have the delete button ready on the on the computer, you know, on your iPad. Because I got to say this about him. He's young. He's enthusiastic, the coach. He dealt with the clowns in Brooklyn. So that's good preparation. So nothing could be worse than dealing with, you know, Kyrie Irving.
Oh, boy.
So therefore, I think the players that right now, they're buying into him because it's not Brad Stevens. As you know, unfortunately, these days with players, as good as a coach, I mean, Popovich is an anomaly, obviously. He's been there 100 years, and the players still listen to him. But as good a coach as you can find in the league, the players will only listen to him for a certain amount of time. And that's a sad commentary on today's players, really. I mean, because if a guy is a successful coach, then, you know, you keep on listening. That's the way it should go. But that's theoretically. In actuality, that doesn't happen that often.
You know, with regards to Popovich, he obviously has a very strong backing of the team's ownership.
Correct.
Because he basically does what he wants to do with that roster. If you're not going to play the way he wants you to play, you're not on the roster.
That's right. And you know what? We saw that. I watched the Olympic Games, Tim, and he coached that Olympic team. And there was a lot of barking early in the Olympic Games because I think they lost like a pre-tournament game. And the players were sort of barking about, oh, he's an older coach and he doesn't know us. And who ended up winning the gold medal?
Yeah.
U.S. Because they finally saw that this guy is an excellent coach. In other words, you know, these are guys that came in from outside teams that are not with the San Antonio Spurs. And they say, hey, you know what? This guy can really coach. And Tatum actually had a terrific run in the Olympic Games. And you hope that carries over into the regular season.
You know, one thing I think, and we got to wrap it up here in a minute, guys.
Yep.
But one thing I think, these young guys are so egotistical. They're so ego-centered. And they're so good. They're such talented athletes. It seems to me that a guy like Popovich is influencing them because he's able to teach them something they didn't know that makes them better.
Yeah.
And that's the key, I think, these coaches. I mean, Brad Stevens he had the room for a while. But someone like Udoka, he knows stuff that maybe these kids don't know. And if he can get that across, he'll have their attention. I just wonder, you know, how much of an influence that is, because in other sports, like, for example, football, there's so much to learn at each level. But these kids come in at 18, 19 years old in the NBA, and they already know it all.
Oh, that's right. They think it doesn't matter if you're Zion Williamson or you know, Romeo Langford. These guys come out of school thinking they know it all.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of put on notice right away that they're not going to, like, obviously run the team at age 20, you know. And That's a good thing. So obviously in football, as we see, whether it's Belichick or anybody, you know, coaches have far greater control of their players in the NFL than they would in the NBA. I mean, in the NFL, if you defy a coach, you're just put on waivers the following week. See you later. But in the NBA, the money is so big that the coaches sort of, they really have to listen to the players and give them some lip service, at least, and pay attention to what they have for suggestion. But in the end, the coach has to be the final arbiter of things, you know. So, I mean, it brings us back to the Celtics here, and can this new guy, they seem to like him a lot, the players seem to like him a lot. I think they'll play hard for him, and it's a matter of what is the talent level of this team, and we'll start finding out Wednesday when they play the New York Knicks. I've seen the Celtics rated ahead of the New York Knicks in the standing, you know, projected standings, and I kind of like, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, it could be around that sort of, that kind of team.
You know, Mike, you mentioned, and Rick, you guys mentioned, you know, Popovich teaching these guys things they don't know. My baseball mentor, Franny Gill from Lynn, used to tell us, I don't know one-tenth of this game. How can you know anymore?
That's a great way of putting it.
And he used to prove that to us every single Sunday.
Yeah.
And that we knew nothing.
Right. And I mentioned Bill Russell before when he was coaching and playing almost 48 minutes a game. He allowed the players to run the timeouts and make the adjustments because he was basically catching his breath. So there is room for input from players who are smart enough to use that input correctly.
There you go. Hey, Mike, this is great, as always, and we'll be talking about... They've got one or two games coming up this week.
Right. They've got a couple. They got Wednesday at New York, Friday, I believe, is the home opener against Toronto. And then they go right, I think the very next night, they go to, like, Atlanta. I believe they got, like, four games, really, in the very first 6 or 7 days
all right.
of the season.
Make sure you take good notes, because I want to hear what you have to say.
We will.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Jim, I'm glad you're feeling better. Rick, hope you're feeling better.
I am. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's Mike Grenier, who is a sports writer and just a Celtics expert, really. All right, Coach, final thought.
Go Sox. It's time. Get down to business. You know, you swinging the bats. You're at home. Keep swinging the bats. Hit that fastball.
It looks like Kike can hit anything right now. Where'd he come from? Do you remember his batting average? Like, he had all these home runs midway through the season. His average was like 219, you know, 220. And now all of a sudden it's just, man, he's hitting the cover off the ball. Hope I'm not jinxing him here.
It's looking like a beach ball.
That was funny. Did you see that one? That cracked me up. That was so funny.
When you're in that zone.
That promo, yep.
It looks like a beach ball.
Yep. All right, Coach, thank you very much. So you'll be here next Monday, hopefully. Good Lord, when the crick don't rise.
Yeah.
Nobody puts his...
snows and
well, I'm getting my skis tuned up, so I'll be ready.
Yeah, I got my new tires to be put on tomorrow.
We are ready.
I got my snow blowers coming back on Thursday.
All right. All right, that's Tim Kearns, Bill Newell. We'll be hosting the North Shore Sports Writers, not the North Shore, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast tomorrow morning right here on MSO and also on the Salem News website. Be sure to check that out as they talk a whole bunch of local sports and other stuff as well. And we'll be covering something here this weekend, so check out the website to see where we're going to be. In the meantime, this is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore with Tim and Bill. Thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye.